First of all, before delivering my message, I wanted to thank Reverend Tim, and I think maybe Ian Murray may have had something to do with this as well. And certainly as an alumni, coming back during Alumni Weekend to deliver the message is indeed something that I was very quick to accept. So it's wonderful to be here in your midst this evening. I certainly didn't want to hear the word taxes in the gospel, but sure enough, there it was. But when I come to Manning Memorial Chapel, while I've been here since graduating with a Bachelor of Education in 1971 and in 1980 with a Master's from Acadia, the chapel was a very special place for me during my year here. In fact, it was that wonderful break mid-morning when there would be a short service. And I can say there were few mornings went by in my life as a student. Maybe it was because I was just recently married that I needed to come and have those moments here in the quiet of the chapel. But it was a place that I found so welcoming, but also so enriching in the Spirit of the Lord that would have been delivered by the chaplain of that day. And also we had a very strong group of young people who did avail themselves of that opportunity. In fact, tonight, first of all, when I was when the first hymn and the fourth verse of the hymn really is much about what my message is this evening. And the fourth verse goes, "Lord of all, of church and kingdom, in an age of change and doubt, keep us faithful to the gospel, help us work your purpose out." And I know during my time and life as an educator, it was often a role, and I see a couple of other educators here this evening, and very often working with young people. It was to try and work a little bit of some of those spiritual truths, some of those values from our Christian faith, our Christian tradition, into good daily living was a role that I took very seriously and used many opportunities along the way. But I think there's a call on all of us to look for God's purpose and God's plan for our life. And so this evening, if I were to have given Reverend Tim a title, it would have been "Things God Cannot Do Without Us." And I like that sweep of the Bible from the Old to the New Testament, and as we gain and gather in from the God of history to the God of the New Testament, and that's where I'll take my words this evening. And one of the most thrilling and awakening passages in the Bible is the one with which it opens. It transports us to the very beginning of things, to the fresh dawn of creation, the divine voice summoning, order out of chaos, light out of darkness, life out of the uncharted void. And from Genesis chapter 1, verse 31, very familiar text, "After 6 days of creation, we read, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was good." I like to go a little further and say, very good, but not perfect. And in that context, I am reminded of a story I heard of not just probably one young person, but many young people, as they look at the world and they see evil, they see suffering, they see disease, and they see really a lot of misery in the world. And certainly as we look at our time, really we can say not a lot has changed. In fact, at the current moment, as the Minister of Health, I'm called to look at, are we prepared for Ebola? Who would have ever thought? But that's the world we live in. And when a young man, asked this of a minister, why did God ever make such a world? Why, I could make a better world than this myself. And the minister responded, that's exactly the reason God put you in this world, to make it better. Now go ahead and do your part. And in the minister's answer, there is a subtle truth that is often overlooked. We always reference our dependence on God, and we forget that God depends on us. There are so many things that the divine maker cannot do without us. The narrative of the Old Testament and the ancient sages can best be summed up. Man is a partner to the Holy One. Blessed be the work of creation. Why did God put us in this unfinished world? Here we are in a world crying to be made better. Each of us capable of becoming better, and God asking us to do these jobs with Him because He cannot do them alone. God cannot make a peaceful world unless we help Him by rooting out the hatred from our hearts, the prejudice from our minds, and the injustice from our society. From Psalm 99, which we have just been a part of, the King is mighty. He loves justice. You have established equity in Jacob. You have done what is just and right. Those are words that I'm able to see at Province House every day. If I go into Howl Room, what is right, what is just, what is for the common good. Those are words very similar, and maybe a lot of you or some of you don't know, we have, just like when I was here as a student and throughout my life, more of a public opportunity for prayer. Because we start our day in the legislature with a prayer that the speaker reads and followed by the Our Father. But you don't have to attend. It's that wonderful choice that we have and an opportunity. I'm sure some of you have come to Province House. You probably have wondered if we have prayed when we get a little bit out of line. But, when we take a look at building a better world, and sometimes as we start right at home, God cannot build a happy home unless husband and wife work with Him by bringing a spirit of sharing, mutual respect, abiding loyalty, and compassion. I had the opportunity this evening to take along, I didn't know if there'd be any audience, so I decided to take my own audience with me, and I brought Doug and Pat Armstrong here with me this evening. And there's a couple who my wife and I wonderfully admire for their many, many years of togetherness, working together, raising five wonderful daughters, faithful to each other and to their Christian commitment. And in fact, Christ among their lives is what really stands out. God cannot even give us a peaceful night's sleep unless we cooperate with Him by doing an honest day's work. And that really is our call each and every day, to do our best. And I think my wife would attest, I must work long, hard days. I sleep well. God cannot forgive our transgressions unless we help Him by genuine contrition for what has been and a firm resolve for what we mean to accomplish. God heals the sick, but not without the surgeon's hands, the right medicine, the nurse's vigilance, the encouragement of loved ones and friends. And over the past year, if I diverge for a moment, I have been able to capture the tremendous strengths of our healthcare system in a small province, in one that's financially challenged. But I weekly get an opportunity to see, experience, and hear about the wonderful work of our healthcare system. And in fact, as one of the surgeons who I've been able to spend some time with, he often says, we punch well above our weight and what should be expected of our healthcare system. And he's one of only three people in North America that is now starting to look at the molecular makeup of each person's cancer and start to individualize the treatment. And that is remarkable exploratory work that he is doing. God brings forth bread from the earth, and we are just coming through a wonderful harvest here in the valley. But not without the farmer who prepares the soil, plants the seeds, harvests the crop. And one of the great challenges, I know, in political life and for all of us, is to help the poor with the charity we give, to cheer the lonely with visits we make, comfort the bereaved with the words we speak and caring actions, guides our children with the examples we set, ennobles our lives with the good deeds we perform. This is part of God's plan for us in the world, to be part of those riches that we can give to others. And so many of those are available in our daily walk. Now, we can gather most of those wonderful tenets and aspects of our faith through the God of history, through the richness of the Old Testament. Those are the urgings. But as we, who are people of the New Testament pilgrims, we have been called to live gospel values. In fact, it was very early in Jesus' ministry and preaching that we are called to the mountainside with his followers. Reverend Tim did a wonderful job on the Beatitudes tonight. According to Matthew chapter 5, this was a foundational statement for living and working towards Christian ideals. We are called to that same sermon on the Mount to hear the proverb-like proclamations, the Beatitudes. In almost every case, the condition reference is from familiar Old Testament context. But Jesus teaches a new interpretation. These are Christian ideals. In fact, the highest ideals of the teaching of Jesus on mercy, spirituality, and compassion. Four of the best Beatitudes directly relate to our earthly attitude and actions to our eternal reward. Think of four of those Beatitudes. Maybe I should just reference them for a moment. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So there is no real dichotomy between how we live and our eternal reward. Or perhaps there is if we don't take on that kind of beatitudinal approach to life. If I can mix maybe the secular commands with the sacred for a moment, this is a good place perhaps to be speaking about, very appropriate here at Acadia, when I recently read, and we've all become familiar with the Ivanhoe Report, or I like to say President Ivanhoe's report. And it's already perhaps a pretty famous report. But when I read that report, I wrote two words, or I could have written two words at the bottom of each and every page, and it was called Attitudinal Shift. And no matter really where we are in our continuum of the Christian journey or a spiritual path, a beatitudinal shift will enable us to do ordinary things extraordinarily well. And that's why I like the Beatitudes. Because remember my earlier premise, things God cannot do without us. And if we take on that beatitudinal approach, in fact, each of us is indispensable in the part assigned to us by the Master. Each of us has a job to do that will remain undone if we do not do it. Each of us has love that only we can give. Each of us has compassion that will be denied to the world if we suppress it. One of my spiritual mentors is a man that perhaps many of you, especially in this community of Wolfville, are familiar with, and that's Jean Vanier. And I've had the opportunity to meet Jean Vanier on two occasions. And he talks about how the human and the spiritual are so interwoven. And he says, we cannot grow spiritually if we ignore our humanness. And we cannot become fully human if we do not grow spiritually. So we can ennoble and spiritualize and have that beatitudinal approach in daily life. But Jean Vanier goes on to really put it in perspective when he says, we do not have to be saviors of the world. We are simply human beings, enfolded in weakness and in hope, called together to create a better world. Each of us is doing our indispensable small parts. With labor prompted by love and endurance inspired by hope in Jesus Christ, as we just read in 1 Thessalonians. And here ultimately may be the reason that you and I are indeed here on this earth. God needs us. We are joined with the God of history, blessed by living Jesus' teaching through the Beatitudes in this great partnership.